C1B 1 and 2.
Number 12A.
When we consider the chapter Science of Being, we have said that that title alone gives us two ideas to think about, namely science and being. What we have been doing in the first part was actually contemplating the nature of being, and we could see the system of being in it. And therefore we can ask ourselves also now, what is the scientific approach that this chapter demands, the scientific approach for a science? Because a science must always be approached through its adequate method. Science demands that like understands like, or that only like can understand like. Therefore, science can only be understood scientifically and not in any other way. In this chapter, Mrs. Eddy therefore brings up the question now, what are the scientific tools that are necessary in order to understand this being? What are these scientific tools? And also, because the whole chapter has, or the first part has that sense that the idea resolves its opposite belief, that it would show that only scientific tools are adequate, and that therefore they must take the place of unscientific tools of understanding. Or in other words, the scientific tools of understanding must dissolve the unscientific tools of understanding. So when one reads that chapter, one notices from time to time, as if you would leave the consecutive theme or melody and brings in either between two commas or as a whole sentence, the proposition that his subject must be approached with scientific tools. When one is reading such a text and begins to hear the melody in it, and then when one tries to test if that melody which one hears is actually in the text, you will always come to portions of the text that does not seem to be in tune with that melody. Why? Now we know why. Because the text is written like a score, and therefore secondary melodies have to be put into the text. And so when one reads such a text, one should also notice when something else, when another instrument, when another melody is, or another voice is being played. And that enables one to detect really those secondary subjects. Like, for instance, here, that she is very much interested in showing that only true scientific tools should be used to understand the first part. So what can one do when one begins to become aware that other melodies are intertwined? And then what one usually does is that one reads the text again, but as what one calls selective reading. What is selective reading? Selective reading, you have that in any scientific book or in any book. It is that one has selected a certain subject which one feels is there. One doesn't yet quite know if it's there. Like here would be the question, doesn't Mrs. Eddy also show the scientific tools that must be applied, and what are the unscientific tools that must be applied? You see, this is quite a different tone, quite a different theme. And then when one feels that there is something like that, then one has to read the text again through, but selectively, namely just to listen to those, to that new theme, and read, because over perhaps half a page, or over a whole paragraph, or perhaps over a whole page, this new theme doesn't enter. Just like in a symphony, the clarinet may not enter always, but only here and there and there, and then it stops again. Sometimes there are large portions where the clarinet doesn't play at all and suddenly becomes perhaps more important and stresses the whole symphony more. And so also in a text one has to do that. Therefore, selective reading would be for, in music, to read only that clarinet and see what does the clarinet contribute to the whole symphony, and leaves out all the others. One does that by reading a text through rather quickly, notes, as one reads it through, notes where Mrs. Eddy would now write about this specific tone, that specific theme, that specific instrument, and would make notes as one goes along, short notes, and then one can, afterwards, when one has gone through the whole text, weigh, is there anything in it or not? Or was I just a bit misled by some parenthetical remarks, or is there something in it? That's the method to apply. Therefore, here, if we feel, say, by reading the text, we always come across interjections into the general flow of the subject, that Mrs. Eddy would say, we need scientific tools, we need scientific instruments of understanding, we can't do with unscientific tools, then we read the text, and if one has really put one's finger on the right spot, one begins suddenly to see something wonderful, because then that secondary melody, or whatever we may call it, suddenly begins to yield something new. For instance, here, I have gone through the text and have picked out of those about 40 pages, I guess about 200 or so statements, just short statements, in which Mrs. Eddy would show how to approach the text or the subject scientifically. And what did I find? You do that chronologically, not, you can't do it otherwise, not with a concordance, because you have to take the text. And you find something wonderful. Namely, you find that Mrs. Eddy presents these tools adapted to the subject of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love in a wonderful variation of tools. As if she would give you, so to say, 7 tools with which you can manage that whole subject, with which you can deal with that whole subject. What does she say? And I just run quickly through the main points, and let's take the first big subject, mind, where we have seen that there Mrs. Eddy presents that the general subject there was that the idea of mind as metaphysics dissolves the belief of in a material basis. But what are the tools that you apply when you reason along mind? What are your mind tools of understanding? And when you read it, you come to the following, and you just listen, if you can catch the tone, you will see that her tools here are always thought, thinking, that the thoughts must be right. For instance, in that subject, which has 7 subtones, one would even see that she varies that tool of thinking according to the subtones. She would say in mind as mind, you know, all depends on thought, on metaphysics. Metaphysics is thinking above the material. And in mind as spirit, she would show that you can't do it with half thinking and half matter. Semi-metaphysics is not a tool. Just to think that you can approach it halfway with thinking and halfway on a material basis, it doesn't give you an insight. In the subtone of mind as soul, she again brings up the tool of thinking and says, you know, you have to resolve things into thought. It must all be thought processes. In the subtone of mind as principle, she shows that that thought must be brought back to mind, to the science of mind. In the tone of mind as life, She shows that thoughts must always rise higher and higher. Can you still see thought, thought, thought is the measure. In the tone of, say, mind as truth, she shows that that must be, that in order to have a consciousness that can actually approach reality, you must have spiritualized thoughts, which is consciousness, divine consciousness. And then in mind as love, she goes then a bit further and says that therefore in your thinking you should always go out from mind. Yes? Could you hear? The instrument that she presents here are actually thoughts, to the point where she says actually thoughts coming from God being backed up, coming from mind being backed up by mind is really the instrument through which you approach the subject. And so it goes on, and I don't need to tell you all the subtones. From now on I just speak about the main instruments that she is showing, just to give us an impression how absolutely exquisite her text is, and that we haven't had the faintest idea about the exactness. I think exquisite is a nice expression for it, to present the subject. For instance, when she comes to the second great tone of spirit, there in spirit, her whole accent is then on understanding spiritually. That understanding must be based on spiritual understanding, not on material beliefs. It's constantly showing that understanding must be an understanding based on spiritual values and not an understanding based on material values. Be that those material values material beliefs, which weigh against understanding spiritually, be it therefore material sense that tries to understand, be it the mortal belief, be it material belief, all that, she says, are not really giving us a introduction, are not really the tools that are adequate to understand spiritual things. It must be understanding on the basis of spiritual things, of spiritual ideas. So it's different than mind. When she comes to soul, to the whole passage of soul, she makes quite a point on showing that every approach that is limited can never really see the reality of this chapter. That tools that are in any way finite are inadequate. That only tools that are infinite, that are really stretched infinitely, that only these can understand. That with a finite conception, we can never understand the infinite. And so here we get the great sense of that limited beliefs, whatever they are no way to understand, but it needs spiritual understanding, spiritual sense. These are the tools to understand that which is limitless, infinite. Therefore, every tool we use which go out from a limited concept, like finite beliefs, which go out from many minds, from a finite mind, that they all don't work, that what is necessary, that they are unlimited, like inspiration, like the senses of soul, like spiritual understanding, that only that can give us the unlimited sense of reality. And then she goes to principle, again she changes. She changes there and says, you know, actually, every instrument you choose for understanding reality that is not used from the standpoint of principle, and therefore is used as a tool of interpreting your subject from a principle, is actually not a good instrument. It doesn't really get you anywhere. So she begins to show that all those instruments that have really their origin outside of a principle are not real tools. like human beliefs, human concepts, like our own interpretation, human theories. It's a lot of human in it, because man's own beliefs, man's own interpretation, man's own opinions, finite thoughts, and so on, that they can never interpret rightly. And then she gives the right tools and says, we must find tools that really interpret from God. These are the right tools. We have to interpret the universe from God. She says we must learn from principle, you see, to draw everything from a principle, to take the standpoint of principle, to look out from principle, to see at the subject from principle. You see what I said yesterday? We only ask wrong questions because we don't ask questions that are asked from principle. The moment we ask questions from the human mind, from human interpretation, from human beliefs, from human opinions, questions that have their origin in the physical sense testimony, that these questions always are wrong. They must be wrong. They must be wrong questions that do not even need an answer. Because a right question is only then when it is an interpretation from principle. When from the standpoint of principle we investigate and interpret the universe. And therefore only those questions that go out from there are true tools of investigating reality. You know, this is terrific. We sit here and just listen to it and say, uh-huh, yes. What does he say? Uh-huh. But do you know that the whole of mankind for the last 2,500 years were hung up, thank you, were hung up because of this. Half the philosophers who are interested in interpreting reality, in interpreting what the universe and man and life is all about, have they always asked questions from the divine principle? Or have they asked questions that they have figured out in their own head? They didn't ask from the divine principle. Therefore, you can throw the whole philosophy out of your window in this way, because they were stating wrong questions, and then they tried for thousands and thousands of years to find the right answer, and they never found it. So every age has another philosophy. Are we aware of what Mr. Zeddy discovered? I feel that, in general, the Christian scientists are not aware what Mrs. Zeddy discovered. They just feel Mrs. Zeddy discovered that God is love, and that because God is love, he loves us, and so we feel very cozy, you know. God loves me. Oh, that's so warm and cozy. That's all right. It's nice. I have nothing to say against that. But this is not the science she discovered. She really put all those big questions right. This is terrific. Here you have it. She says, your tools of asking questions, of trying to find an answer, from the standpoint of human reasoning, of human beliefs, from human theories, and try to find a proper answer and an adequate answer, just doesn't work. Because the instrument is not scientific. There is only one instrument that is scientific if you go out from principle, and therefore look out from principle and contemplate what principle sees. So we must learn from principle, not from any other source. And so spiritually to understand is only possible, she says, from God. I bet your life becomes much easier after this week. And you have learned that you shouldn't ask so many questions. But that we are very much busy and engaged from morning to night, also when we think out from God, and not up to God, not from man, not from the human brain, but out from God. Then it's quite different. So in life, she changes it again. Here the wrong instruments she presents are always mortal instruments. She speaks about, quite interesting when she comes to that part, it's always mortal sins, mortal beliefs, mortal illusions, mortal error, mortal man, mortals. Isn't it terrific? How on earth she could do that? Because I think she was not aware what she was doing. I just can't see that she was aware of what she was doing. I think she would have shouted from the housetop to say, look here, what textbook I have. I can understand now that she was saying that she herself had to learn it, that she herself had to study it, and that she even said to the publisher half a year before she left us that she now begins to understand her textbook. This is now absolutely understandable when one begins to realize that she could no way in a premeditated way, is that the right term, in a premeditated way, write that text. Must have been really a dictate from the divine mind, really that she was a channel for that divine mind and just wrote down what the divine mind dictated to her. And that she must have a terrific spiritual sense that she could hear the symphony of being and correct that symphony as she went on and polished it through the various editions of the textbook until she could really catch the purity of that symphony. And then she had to try to learn her own symphony, what it is all about. That's why she said it takes centuries. It takes centuries. See, if she would have felt, no, this textbook is now so clear and I can explain it to anybody who comes to my class, I just can explain it, look here what I have written. Well, then she wouldn't have felt that it takes century really to discover what she has written, to discover her discovery. See, these are the secrets of all revelations. All revelations from God, whatever you have in the religious books, no matter in which high religion, all the religious books are secrets. They are sealed with seven seals. Just as in the Apocalypse it is said, they are sealed with seven seals. And that's the safety of this book. Because the safety of this book then is in that only that is being revealed. Only that portion of the whole truth is revealed to an age which the age is willing to swallow, to stomach, not more. It gives to the child milk and then afterwards meat. Yeah. So that's tone of life. No, I only showed the negative side, that what are not the right instruments. Therefore, the right instrument which she gives here is really spiritualized consciousness. She speaks here about the mind of Christ, that we should have a spiritual sense of life, to be spiritually minded. This is really the tone here. Only spiritual mindedness can open the secrets here. It is as if she would say, she doesn't quote that, but one hears that, always hear what Jesus said, that this is life eternal, that you shall know him. That life can only be tapped, so to say, by the mind of Christ, by spiritual mindedness.